Welcome to the Nobody Guide to Life, where we provide tips and tools for personal growth, personal development, and your spiritual journey that you can use right now in your everyday life. I'm J.A.
And I'm Melissa.
You can always find out more at thenobodyguidetolife.com, and you can check out videos and find episodes on the Nobody Guide to Life YouTube channel. Thank you for joining us. Everyone has a journey. Everyone. There are twists and turns. There are predictable stops and things that come out of the blue. And it's also possible that one morning we're on one path, and then maybe by evening we're on another path entirely. It's our journey, yes, but you know, others join us, others leave us. We never know who we'll meet, who will leave, or what profound impact our encounters will have on our lives and others' lives. And for today's guest, her life has been a series of twists and turns she never expected, but that have enabled her to touch countless lives. Linda Smith grew up in poverty in a life of neglect and abuse, but she knew a great destiny awaited. A high school dropout turned model and actress, Smith married a popular entertainer. They ended up in the Las Vegas celebrity community, but just as her life came together, it seemingly came crashing down. She gave birth to a disabled son, Christopher, and didn't know what would happen to her life. But Christopher became a catalyst that catapulted Linda into a life behind the Vegas Strip, producing charity events and concerts to raise funds from millionaires and city movers and shakers, eventually raising hundreds of millions of dollars for disability causes. Linda is now a speaker, nonprofit consultant, founder of the Christopher Smith Foundation, and author of Unwanted: How a Mother Learned to Turn Shame, Grief, and Fear into Purpose, Passion, and Empowerment. And she also runs lindaslife.com. It's been one heck of a journey, and Linda is with us today to talk about it. Welcome to the show, Linda.
Well, thank you. Thanks so much for having me on your wonderful show.
Oh, we're happy to have you here. So let's start with this first question. You've had so many twists and turns and such an impressive bio. Tell us about maybe your early years and how you had dreams and how that helped you grow up and cope with some of the abuse and the poverty you experienced.
Well, yeah, I think as a child, I had no idea. You're just really never prepared for the future, and you think about all kinds of things. And when I look back on my childhood, I really, in some ways, don't know that I would change much, even though it was at times horrific. But I think my childhood prepared me for what I was eventually able to become and to do. And it's actually something that I worry so much about when I see young people who are so fortunate to, you know, have everything sort of given to them, and they don't have to struggle to get things. And so I think when you grow up having to overcome, you can lay down and die and feel sorry for yourself,
right?
Or you can kick into gear and get going. And so my choice was to not be that poor kid and to be something else. And so at some point in my life, I made that decision. And I vaguely remember, actually, it was around 11 or 12 years old when I'm not going to be that kid.
Wow.
Yeah, Linda, talk about that a little, because, you know, we, no matter what our journey is in this life, we were all kids once. I mean, that's just something we all have in common. When you were at that young age and you had these dreams, what was that dialogue like inside of you when you decided that that wasn't how you wanted your life to go? Where did you find it inside of you at that age to make that change?
You know, I think I got mad, and there had been a series of things that happened to me. You know, you keep getting kicked in the teeth, you know, yeah. Eventually it's like, really? And there was a couple of defining moments, but one in particular, I was a scruffy kid. We were homeless. We had escaped the abuse of my father, who was a pervert. I was born in England, moved to Toronto to get away from him. And then he came looking for us. And I mean, it's a bit of a story, but he was eventually deported because he tried to kill us all. And so he was thrown out of the country. And at about 11 years of age, here I was, and we were scrambling to exist. And I remember this particular moment when I had scraped together some money. It was like $4.50, something like that. And I wanted to buy a lipstick. And I went into a large department store. I chose this store because I was never able to buy anything in this store. And it was a fancy store in downtown Toronto. And going up to the counter and being ignored at the counter by the woman who just wouldn't make eye contact. And I stood there and she kept, you know, like sort of raising her nose in the air and passing me by. And I was a customer. And then she saw somebody better than me that she went to wait on. And then I saw myself through her eyes. I just saw, you know, this scruffy, unkempt individual who looked like a beggar, I guess, to her. And it just outraged me. I just, something just came over me. And I just shouted, "Why won't you serve me?" And you could hear it through the whole store. You know, "I've been standing here, but why won't you help me? I want to buy this lipstick." And this woman moved so quickly to serve me because she was mortified that I had raised my voice, and she just wanted to get rid of me. But it was also a very empowering moment because I saw, you know, as a kid, I had made an adult jump and run and look after me and gotten the attention of a lot of people. So that was one of those moments that I remember almost floating out of that store because everybody was staring at me and not like in pity, but in shock. I just walked out of that store with my head held high, and it changed me. And I had a series of little things like that. That was like, no, I'm just not going to be this person that's not going to be waited on and served. And I'm not going to be that person that's going to be looked down on. And I'll do whatever it takes.
Yeah. So that was the day you really found your voice, I guess.
I think so. Mm-hmm. And watching, seeing myself in other people, and you know, when you're in a post office and seeing people not being treated right, I'm going to step up now and say, I understand what she wants. Why don't you? Mm. I think those moments, whether they're meant to be.
So you ended up becoming a model and an actress, which really did put you in front of a lot of people. Is that where you felt most comfortable?
Yeah, and more moments like that, you know, I was a kid that didn't have nice clothes. I went to school. I wasn't one of the popular girls. I felt ugly and isolated, and it made me mad. And another moment when I was told by someone that I admired that I was pretty. And just that, I didn't think I was pretty. And so that changed my life because somebody I admired, and it's a lesson for all of us that we have to be kind and say nice things to people. And, you know, just this early this morning, I had my hair done by a young girl and I could see she was stressed. And I told her, she had this short cropped hair, and I said, only somebody really pretty and beautiful could wear their hair like that. And I know that I changed that girl's life this morning. And so I think we have to do those kinds of things. And that's what happened to me. And I started to look at myself, not as a person that nobody wants to be around, but yeah, maybe I am pretty. Mm-hmm. And I taught myself to dance because there was no money for dance lessons. And I was so desired to be this dancer, to be a model, to be an actress, that it was, you know, get out of my way because that's where I'm going. And it's true that my very first audition for a television show, it was a nationally televised variety show in Canada, and I auditioned along with several hundred other girls for a position as a dancer. And they were all there in their pretty tutus, and I was there in my scuffed, you know, jeans, and danced my heart out and was the first person actually picked.
Wow.
Yeah. And I went on to become the lead dancer of that television show. So it just shows you, if you can show people what you have inside of you and believe in yourself. And I've always, to me, no matter what I'm doing, whatever project it is, I'm not looking at the finish line. I'm looking way beyond the finish line always.
Well, Linda, that brings up an interesting question that gets us to the next part of your story, which is when we focus on the finish line and then something comes and detours us that maybe we never saw coming. And so you were building this life of confidence and you were getting the roles and getting on stages. And so what happened? At what point did your life turn? What did that look like when the turn happened?
It was with the birth of my son, Chris. And I had, you know, I was on this trajectory. Everything was just going great. I was in demand. I married the Canadian Entertainer of the Year. And he had actually moved to Las Vegas and had a home in Las Vegas and was appearing all over the country, but largely in Las Vegas. And I moved to Las Vegas thinking I would continue my career in Las Vegas. And after a couple of years, I didn't want to be a dancer on the Las Vegas Strip. And I, you know, I sort of struggled a little bit with my identity in Las Vegas. And then 3 years into the marriage, I got pregnant and with Christopher. And what happened with Christopher actually was, at 8 months pregnant, I jumped onto an airplane on a junket flight that was going to Toronto. And the reason I did that was that my husband was going to be appearing in Toronto on the due date. So I thought, well, I'll go ahead of him and I'll get squared away with a doctor in a hospital. And as soon as the plane left, I went into labor on this plane. So midway to Toronto, I'm in labor. And the interesting thing in that story is a junket flight. They're industry flights. Yeah. And a friend, Wayne Newton, is a friend and an entertainer here in Las Vegas. And he had secured this seat for me on the flight. And midway through, all of these people were looking after me. It turned out there were 75 doctors on the plane. It was a medical ticket. So they were all hoping I would have the baby on the plane. And it would have been interesting had I had the baby on the plane, because I may not have the same kind of story to tell. At one point, the pilot was going to divert the plane to Chicago because I was an emergency patient in labor. But anyway, plane landed in Toronto. 3 hours later, Christopher is born with Down syndrome. And that is the defining moment in my career change, was when Christopher was born. Although I wasn't happy about it, that wasn't a plan. And I was told at his birth that I should I was told he wasn't going to live very long, and that was a good thing. I was told that there are places for kids like this. There's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with your husband. We're sure it's a chromosome abnormality that happens one in every so many births, and you should forget about this one and just go have another. And I was confronted with that, and I actually wanted to forget about him and go have another. I mean, it was just a shocking thing. And I was by myself in this hospital with no one around and as the emergency patient. But then that lasted a few days. And then, of course, he was just a helpless little baby who needed our help. He didn't die. And there's a long story of the acceptance of Chris and what happened in the next few days and weeks. But the story that really changed my mind, changed my life, was the discrimination that I discovered with regard to kids like my Christopher, and the immigration issue that ensued once we realized that we could not get him into the country. So our home was in Las Vegas. Our jobs were in Las Vegas. And I had a child who fell into an exclusionary class of citizens who were not welcome as immigrants in the United States. And so, you know, I tell the story in my book of what it took to get him legal, but Basically, it was a 17 and a half year fight. And for, you know, if I can just kind of close that bit of this conversation up, it was by a fluke that I was able to eventually get him legal, and we fought. And at age 1.5 years, we were trying to take him across the border, and he was turned back, and we found out that he was on record as an undesirable alien in the United States. And the law said people exempt from entering the United States as permanent residents are number one, criminals, number two, retarded people. When we looked at the Canadian laws, thinking, well, Canada the good, Canada wouldn't exclude people like my Chris. And the law there said at the time, and this is not the dark ages, the law said people exempt from entering Canada as permanent residents were number one, morons, imbeciles, and idiots, and their families, number two, criminals. So that's what we faced as traveling entertainers trying to get our child in. At 2 years of age, we were able to get Vice President Hubert Humphrey to be Christopher's sponsor. And for the next 8 years, Chris was in the United States. We had to get 6-month visiting visas for him, but we always had a vice president as a sponsor. And then when Hubert Humphrey died, we lost our sponsor. We were told to get Chris out of the country, and we didn't. And so I harbored an illegal alien in my home for until I finally got him legal at age 17 and a half.
I'm shocked, actually, at hearing that. That is absolutely shocking.
Right. And I can imagine that that's the kind of fuel that does fire up a life change. Because, I mean, tell us about then how that turned into this life where you stepped onto these even bigger stages now of fundraising. And you've raised hundreds of millions of dollars. Talk to us about how that experience you just related fueled that fire and gave you that courage to step onto those bigger stages.
Yeah, I think, you know, going back again, it's the stuff from childhood, you know, to fighting against all odds that was preparing me to fight for Christopher and kids like him. And I will say, by the way, that the laws, immigration laws, change somewhat. They relaxed, but they're still in effect. Folks with intellectual disabilities still fall into an exclusionary class of individuals. It's a bit easier in some respects, but it's still very hard in others. But I, with Chris's birth, and here, you know, I was a dancer, and I start to think about, you know, what happens to an old dancer? you know, what else can I be? And in Las Vegas, I had been introduced to charitable works, and we, as entertainers, we were asked to perform at different benefits, and I found my calling when, probably because of my showbiz background, I started to help a local struggling organization here in Las Vegas called Opportunity Village. It was just little, and people like my Chris as adults were being served in a dark sort of warehouse looking place. And I just felt so sorry for them. And these were the most loving and welcoming people. And, you know, realizing that all they want is a chance at a life that we all take for granted, I decided to throw my hat into this organization and do what I could to help. And I volunteered for several years, and then I became their very first fundraiser. Wow. And eventually raised over $500 million for this one charity, created all of their events, built four campuses, and built campuses that were models for disability organizations around the country, around the world, actually. And that exposure from what I was able to develop here in Las Vegas, led me to meet disability organizations around the world. And so a couple of years ago, I left the place that I love so much to help other organizations, to write my book, mm-hmm. and to become a fundraising consultant. And now I'm on my way to raising another $500 million for other organizations around the world.
Wow. Can you tell us a little bit more about your book?
Yeah, it was launched this year. Probably that is the most difficult thing that I've ever done for a lot of reasons. I'm a high school dropout. I got my high school degree at age 24 by going to night school. And so again, self-taught dancer and self-taught fundraiser. I probably couldn't get a job today because I sure don't have any degrees. But I'm probably one of the best fundraisers you'll find in the whole country.
I bet that's true.
the book was really tough. And I think when you go to write a book, you really need a lot of encouragement around you and a lot of friends to keep moving you forward and hold you accountable. And I had two such wonderful friends, Bobby and Carol. And Bobby would call me every day and say, "Have you started yet?" You know, and I'd be saying, "Well, I'm cleaning house." And then 2 days later, he'd call again and I'd go, "I'm cleaning house." He'd say, "Well, you were doing that the other day." And so I began to anticipate his calls and I didn't want to disappoint him. And so I started to write. And then he was so enthused when I said, "I wrote 100 words." and then now I wanted to make him happy. And so I wrote another, you know, and finally it was 1,000 words. And oh my gosh, he was so encouraging. The same with my friend Carol, just checking in on me. And I highly recommend that people have those kinds of angels watching over them. And the book it was difficult because I didn't structure it right at the beginning. I knew nothing about writing a book, and it was probably twice as hard as it should have been. And I was learning as I went along. And in the end, I've written a really good book. It's selling really well. It's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all, and on Linda's Life, my website. Mm-hmm. And it's opened the door now to book clubs and speaking engagements. And it really is a memoir of that time in my life of overcoming homelessness, being a dancer, having Chris, and building an organization that is widely admired. Oh, and the very important thing is that 100% of the proceeds of the book go to the Christopher Smith Foundation, named for my beautiful boy, Chris, who lived, and now is where I will try not to cry, because I lost him this year. Yeah, and it's difficult for me to talk about Chris in the present, because he was the love of my life. And I so admired caregivers, other parents. And, you know, I would tell people, my life, my Chris intellectually was a pretty low functioning guy. And so, you know, I equated it to having a 2-year-old for 48 years. If you can imagine that, you know, 24-hour care of a profoundly disabled people. And although I was fortunate to find wonderful caregivers later on in his life to help me, I see those parents in their 60s and 70s pushing a wheelchair with their adult child. And I know the concerns that they have, you know, and that, you know, I didn't want my son to outlive me. And just to be able to say that is a strange thing in itself. But I knew that if I were gone, he wouldn't get the kind of care. So with Chris, I went on the journey that he laid out for me, down the path that he laid out for me. And that's where I am today. Mm-hmm. So the Christopher Smith Foundation is new. It exists today. And this month I will be giving the first gifts to deserving caregivers, families and caregivers who work in the field. And I know my Chris is really happy about that.
I'm sure he is.
Yeah. And so when we ask you the question that we ask all guests, then we can ask it on behalf of both you and Chris. So what's a tip or tool then that we can use in our journeys of personal and spiritual growth? What's something that you and Christopher learned together that you can share with us?
You know, the lesson I learned from Chris, because I think Chris and people like him are the bravest people in the whole world. Mm-hmm. They have to overcome obstacles that would bring most of us to our knees, you know, just to exist, just to get up in the morning is a fight. And so, with Chris, he is who he is. And I tell the story of being backstage with, I'm lucky to have celebrity friends, and being backstage in Celine Dion's dressing room, waiting for Celine to come in, and looking at Chris. He had no concept of who Celine Dion is, but I wanted his picture with Celine. And he's just glaring at me. He's a little Down syndrome guy, and his arms are crossed, and he's just glaring at me. And I try to get him out of that mood. And in swoops Celine, and she's, hello, hello. And Chris goes, shut up. And that's who he is, you know. And so I always tell people, and I tell fundraisers, and I was recently asked by a philanthropist, you know, what advice I would give other fundraisers. It's just be real. Yeah. Be who you are, you know, and open your heart to people. And, you know, we go through life, you know, sort of, you know, you see it. You walk into restaurants, you see people sitting having dinner and no one's talking. They're all on their phone. Or, you know, you sit on a plane and people right away send that vibe. I don't want to talk to you. I'm going to sit here on my phone and do work. And I try to engage people and talk to them, unless they totally shut me out. But usually people open up and you find wonderful people and wonderful stories. And I think we can all change someone's life every day if we open our hearts and our minds and be real.
I think that's absolutely fantastic. And Linda, that's fantastic advice for anybody on this journey of personal and spiritual growth, because, you know, we can't hide from ourselves. And if we're going to go forward to help others, then we need to be as real and authentic ourselves as we can be. So that brings us to the end of this episode of the Nobody Guide to Life. Linda, thank you. Thank you so much for being so real and for sharing your story on our show.
It is my pleasure, and I look forward to hearing it as an audience and a listener. So thank you. Thank you very much.
We appreciate it. And I want to remind our listeners, we never know where life will take us. We don't know who or what will inspire us. So when you get up in the morning, be willing, be open. And like Linda said, be real. Go where the road takes you. You can find out more about Linda Smith and her work and her book, Unwanted, How a Mother Learned to Turn Shame, Grief, and Fear into Purpose, Passion, and Empowerment at lindaslife.com. We'll have links for those in our show notes.
And you can always check out more episodes on the nobodyguidetolife.com or on the Nobody Guide to Life YouTube channel. Find us on Instagram at J.A. Plosker and at Melissa Plosker, or join the Facebook community, The Nobody Guide to Life, Simple Spirituality and Personal Growth. If you like what you heard on this episode, please consider sharing it with someone you know. For now, keep practicing and have a good week.